FT on Twitter.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Welcome to the show. This is Technology Bites, I think. Yeah, Technology Bites. I don't know who that guy was that said whatever he just said. And, yeah.
Yeah, well. We're still.
Yeah?
Yeah, no.
Oh. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's...
Ruvels.
Yeah, well, we're working on getting Pete here. So we have a double whammy on our technical difficulties tonight because... Flicted is not with us tonight. He had to take the night off, and he's usually the one that takes care of wiring in the Skype connection for Pete in San Antonio. So he left the cables for Groovehouse, but Groovehouse has a PC and Flicted has a Mac, so we need to do audio cables, so we don't have the audio cables. We borrowed some, so we're working on getting that link up through the tools that we have. So we're working on getting Pete on the show. And
they have a flashlight out, so I think it's going to be correct.
Flashlight usually is
anytime
an indication
a flashlight pulls
of progress.
Out. Yes, yes.
But the we'll see how it goes. Wouldn't be a Technology Bites if we didn't have some kind of technical difficulty right at the beginning of the show.
So if Pete's listening, he could call in on
an analog
line.
He could call in on the landline, yeah. Yeah, he could call in on the analog line if he wanted to do that. I'm not sure what the technical repercussions are, the financial repercussions are of calling in on a landline from San Antonio, but we could certainly do that. All right, well, let me tell you a little bit about what you need to know about the show. The show is Technology Bites. We're here live in Houston, Texas every Wednesday night from 8 till 10 p.m. We have a website, like any good entity of any kind. We have a website, geekradio.com, aptly named. What are we laughing at, Dwight?
Websites are 2002.
We have a Twitter account.
We have a Twitter. Yeah, there is a tech. It's, what is it? What is it?
There's a. I believe we have twitter.com/geekradio.
But it's like automated, right?
Do we use it? Does it just like whenever we update the site or whenever?
I haven't used it since the 22nd of June. So yeah, but we do have a Geek Radio Twitter account.
Doesn't you ought to give the credentials to all of us so we can all fool around with it. I think that would be pretty funny.
Actually. I could do that. Yeah. I could certainly do that.
Yeah.
So yeah, we have
all I need is another Twitter account.
Well, we also have the Geek Gathering Twitter account.
Those are two separate?
Yeah. We have one that's just for Geek Gatherings.
I love the Geek Gatherings. It's just one of my favorite things ever.
Well, I'm glad that you like it.
I love it.
I'm glad. I think everybody should love it. So, yeah, so anyway, you can visit us on our website at geekradio.com. You can. I've got all of the personal Twitter accounts linked on the Geek Radio site. So if you want to follow D. Silverman or Groove House or Flicked or B. Cannon or J. Lee, you can, or even Geek Mouth, which Peter Hughes, you can follow any of us on Twitter. We have all of those lined up. There's even a list. If you go and look at our lists, there's a list just for the show, so you can follow the list, and that would allow you to follow all of the hosts of Technology Bites as a list.
You can follow me, but I never go anywhere, at least not on Twitter.
No, yeah, but you've been not a little like bit more active on Facebook.
Yeah, I try.
Facebook decided that we were friends, so I get an update every time you update.
Yeah, once you like go in and like somebody's updates or respond to them, it starts pushing more of them out to you. And so,
well, this one actually notifies me. Like if you add somebody to close, yeah. You can go in on Facebook.
Oh, I get updates like that for you, I think. So, yeah,
but I didn't choose you as a close friend. Facebook chose us as close friends.
That's how it works.
I know. It's kind of nice. Hey, buddy. hey, friend. So, yeah, so you can visit us at geekradio.com. That has a lot of the vital information you need to know about the show. That's where you can download the podcast, subscribe to us via iTunes, buy our overpriced T-shirts that we're farming out through some shyster T-shirt company. You can do all of that there. And you will also, if you go to the website, you will see the first thing you see, if your eyes are drawn to the proper part of the page, you will see that we have a Geek Gathering coming up a week from Friday. And that will be our September Geek Gathering in 3D. So you can visit us in person, not just online, but you can come out to the Geek Gathering and hang out with the hosts and fans of Technology Bites. And who knows what will happen. These things have been getting better and better every month. We skipped one last month, but this month we're going to do it. Even though I'm going to be out of town, but the other hosts should be there, barring any unforeseen events. So you can go to the Geek Gathering. Information about where it is and when it is and that sort of thing is available at geekradio.com. You can also play with us in IRC as well as the other. It's the ongoing Geek Gathering in IRC. If you want to join the IRC, it's irc.cuckoo.com.
It's bring your own beer, though.
And your own pants. So you can come into the... No? Don't you supply pants? No, I said you bring your own pants if you want them.
Oh, okay.
I was not suggesting pants were mandatory or anything.
All right, okay.
So if you go to irc.cuckoo.com and your favorite IRC client and join the room Tech Bites, that's the show within a show. If you don't know what any of that means, you can go to geekradio.com and there's an IRC link there where you can join the internet relay chat. You can it'll just do it all for you. All you got to do is pick a nickname and off you go. So That's sometimes amusing. Kojo's in there a lot. KD5 is in there on occasion. Things get said and things happen that we can't talk about on the air when you go into the channel. So you've got that going for you. All right. So that's pretty much all there is to that. And we'll see that the technicians are still working on getting Pete on the air.
Near laser focus.
It is near laser focus, but we're not sure if that laser is focused back in the their eyes or what's going on there. So if you want to call and get in the queue to be on the air, 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air. If we don't get Pete working here pretty soon, we won't have an info shot, which means we'll need to go to the phones and start taking calls right away. That's our fallback measure. That's our fallback measure, to just go ahead and answer computer questions.
It's our raison d'etre.
So while they're working on that, though, there is something. There was a story I was watching on Twitter. Wow, watching a story on Twitter. Apparently, the Syrian Electronic Army.
Oh, they hit Twitter.
They hit
and the
Twitter
New York Times.
And the New York Times. So they actually got wrestled some domain registrars into thinking that they were.
Yeah, there's a registrar called Melbourne IT that's pretty big, but they have reseller affiliates. And while Melbourne IT was fairly secure, one of their affiliates was not, and so that's how they got in. And that's the registrar that Twitter uses. And I'm not sure if the New York Times uses them, but they were able to get to the New York Times domain records and change some stuff to point at the Syrian Electronic Army.
Don't you want to say Symbionese?
Yes, I do. That's the age, isn't it? Yeah.
So these are the political dissidents that are dead set on stopping all the tweeting about Miley Cyrus, or who? Who are these people?
They are supporters of the regime in Syria,
and they have been very, very aggressive about taking over Twitter accounts and media, especially media accounts.
Right.
Like they took over the AP Twitter account
and the LA Times
It's weird they don't have that many followers on Twitter. You know, it's like less than 1,000. I would have thought they might have more, but they're very aggressive, and I don't know that they're particularly clever hacks. They're more social engineering hacks that they're using to gain access, like either sending links to bad sites that cause people, unsuspecting Twitter users, to type in a password or
They fished the reseller affiliate.
Yeah, they fished pretty much all of them.
Yeah.
So, all right. So 713-526-573. That's been interesting. I wonder if that's going to if the cyber stuff's going to heat up if we actually start dropping bombs on Syria here probably tonight or...
Not tonight.
No?
No, I think they're, you know... I think...
You don't think they should do it on the 50th anniversary of the I Have a Dream?
I have a bomb. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it'll happen.
Why? Why don't you think it'll happen?
Because, first of all, the Brits have said that they want to wait to see what the UN does. I think something this intense, they need to make sure they have their coalition together, and I don't think they do yet.
So you think they're going to draw another line in the sand?
I think they'll wait till they have all their buddies lined up with them.
The coalition of the willing?
The coalition of the willing, yeah. The fact that the president said today that, you know, outright that the Syrian government did it, that's the one step. And then the UN inspectors will say that's another step. And once they do that, then they can get kind of the Arab coalition has said that that they believe it was Syria that did it. So things are lining up. I think it'll be a while.
All right. So I've
seen this movie before.
We have. It's just, you know, same story, different actors.
Right.
It's unfortunate. But I suppose it's a tough spot to be in, you know, when you're looking at those kind of atrocities and thinking, well, you know, history has kind of wagged its finger at us for not acting in other situations. So I don't know. I'm glad I'm not in charge of any of this. I'm glad I'm not responsible for
so
any of it.
So are we.
Thanks a lot, Dwight. All right, 713-526-5738. I'm going to check in with Groovehouse and see if what we got technically going on.
Looks like we have help.
We do have help. We have one of the station engineer guy.
How do I get us back?
How do you get what? Groovehouse is. We got to give Groovehouse a little bit of patience and a little bit of understanding. He's been put in a tough position here by Flicted's absence. I hope Flicted's happy with himself tonight. Is he on the IRC?
No, I don't think so.
All right.
He's probably sleeping.
Hey, Groovehouse.
Hi.
How are you?
Pretty good.
How's it going in there?
Not so good.
Not so good?
I asked Pete to call in, but I don't see it ringing.
All right. Well, 713-526-5738. We're just talking about Twitters and stuff. You know, it's being a technology show. What else in the news? We could do our own news. What else do we have?
We have the Apple trade-in program, why is that
interesting?
Because for a long time, other companies like say Gazelle.com and Radio Shack and so forth have been able to make a nice little chunk of change reselling used phones that they collect that they buy back from folks. So, for example, whenever we get a new iPhone in my family, we go down to Radio Shack and trade in the old one, and they give you a substantial amount of cash for it on a discount on the other one. Apple has kind of not been doing that, and they are now going to start playing that game. So I think starting this Friday in some stores and supposedly rolling it out more in September, you'll be able to walk into an Apple store, and they'll take your old iPhone, they'll look at it, they'll go, and then they'll give
you... I'll buy that for a dollar.
Right, exactly. And then they'll give you a gift card, which you then hand back to them and to help pay for a new iPhone.
I want the Samsung watch, the Galaxy watch.
They will not have
days.
That at the Apple store.
They won't have it there, but hopefully they'll have it other places. They beat Apple to market on that. I assume Apple...
It's not out yet.
It's coming out in just a few days. I don't know where to buy it.
It's like a Dick Tracy watch?
It's Android. It's about yay big. It's the I think the original hopes were that it would be made out of a plastic, you know, like OLED covering.
This is the Galaxy Gear.
It's hard. Yeah, it's the Gear. So it just ties into your Android, and you can, you know, get like alerts and notifications and all kinds of stuff from your phone. So it looks pretty sleek. I don't know what pricing is.
Does it have any kind of input on it, or does it...
I think it's Bluetooth, and I would assume...
But can you, like, type on the phone? I mean, on the watch itself?
I don't know.
Or is it just, like, you get a little...
I think there might be, like, a couple of Casio-style buttons on the side, but that's probably about it. I don't know if it's... The resistive touch is pretty cheap, but it's such a small surface, I don't know what you could really do. I doubt you could, like, actually manage a keyboard on that, much less than, you know, like, a couple words a minute.
I mean, if you could set up some kind of... Hawking's kind of interface to where you could press a button and it had prefab responses. You could, like, you know, you could load it up with macros, I suppose.
That'd be pretty cool. That's what it looks like. So, not that everyone at home can see, but yeah, it's coming out September 4th.
Oh, it's got
everyone looking at the radios.
It has a home button on it. It's got a back button on it. Like,
it looks, you know, like the bezel on like a phone, more or less.
So I bet you could scroll through. It looks like you'd be able to scroll through like your Twitter app or your Facebook app and see that kind of, I don't know if it's touchscreen and you can scroll. I would imagine it probably is. So it looks like it's 1/3 of the screen off of an Android device.
I like watches, and I grew up. My dad was worked for Zales, and I grew up helping him in his store, and I like to, like, sell the watches. So I like the idea of watches. I don't know how I feel about smartwatches.
Yeah, what about, like, leaving gears and the minutiae of, you know, the inner workings of a watch and going, like, straight on digital?
What do we got? We got Pete?
Oh.
Hopefully.
There you are. Yay! we are going through some news items just in case, so... We've covered everything you would likely cover. No, it's just kidding. We did talk about the Apple trade-in program, and we're just now discussing the Samsung Galaxy Watch. So you think it should actually have gears?
No, I'm asking the inner workings of the watch, or just the idea of having stuff on your wrist.
Was the early days of the LCD and LED watches? Remember the big Pulsar? Massive kind of gold-looking things with the red LED buttons on them. Jay remembers those,
probably. Yeah.
And, you know, those type of things. And I had one of those early on. I had a watch that had a keyboard at the bottom of it and had a stylus that you pulled out of the buckle.
Whoa.
And it was a calculator. Calculator watch. I had a Casio calculator
watch. I had a Casio one. Yeah, that was awesome.
But I don't know that I want something that, like, talks to my... I mean, why do I need to do this when I can...
But do you do that anyway?
Well, that's why you don't have to do it.
If I ask you the time and you have your phone in your hand, do you flip and look at your watch?
I look at my watch.
You do, don't you? Yeah. Right. I mean, I've noticed that with people of a certain age that still wear watches.
Well, it's muscle memory.
Yeah. But, like, they'll be looking right square at their phone, which should have the time.
They'll flip the phone over and look at the watch.
Exactly. They will. It's amazing to watch.
Yep.
I would like to be able to get just
On the other
some
hand,
basic...
I've seen people with watches fish for their phone to find out what time it is.
That's the thing. I'd like to stop fishing for the phone. I mean, the more times I take my phone in and out of my pocket, that's just going to up the chances of me dropping it. In a front pocket, usually. It depends. I keep it up here.
Don't you if that's the case, why don't you have a Bluetooth headpiece?
Because I don't like brain cancer, and you know, and it interferes with my tinfoil hat. It just kills the signals. I don't like Bluetooth. Maybe I'm of that generation that just doesn't like people just blabbering really loud. I like to know if I'm looking. I live downtown for a while, so I like to know if the person I'm dealing with is crazy or on the phone, and it's really hard to tell with Bluetooth.
Well, that was my thought during when they had the Republican convention come to town and they cleaned up Main Street and got rid of all the homeless and the whores and stuff. I said, they should just give all the homeless people a plastic thing to put on their ear with a blue glowing
light.
Some
paper disposable suits?
It doesn't even have to be connected to anything so that when people are ranting and raving to themselves, it'll just look like they're on the phone. All right, do we still have Pete or did we lose? No, we lost Pete, so that didn't last long. Good thing we didn't try to do the news or something. But yeah, so Bluetooth, fake Bluetooth for the homeless. Make them less threatening.
Sounds like a slogan.
That sounds like the Wi-Fi hotspots of homeless people in Austin for South by Southwest last year.
Oh, that just sounded terrible and exploitive. Yeah. But this is just, you know, more sweeping the problem under the rug kind of a thing. All right, so we're still working on getting Pete here, but 713-526-5738, what, landline?
We had a connection. We lost a connection. I'm trying to get the connection back.
I understand. You're doing a good job. Do we want to take this call that's coming in, and we'll do that? And we'll just, you know, we'll take some calls and try to iron out the Peter issue. So, you know.
I love the fact that here we are at Technology Show, and we often have
Technology problems.
Well, you know it's real. It's getting real.
One of the challenges, you know, in larger format radio stations, they have two control rooms where, you know, the one show can go in and kind of get everything set up and get ready, and then they just switch between.
And one's hot, one's cold, like data centers,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And they probably have redundancy in case, like, you know, like someone doesn't have the right cable. There's probably another one of those cables somewhere.
We're not one of those radio stations. So.
We also was another, in case we don't get Pete back in, there was another big news story, Steve Ballmer's announcement that he's going to retire. It was very interesting.
And there was much rejoicing.
The stock rejoiced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Dvorak was saying that he was calling for Microsoft to be broken up into different parts. Oh. Like, not that I ever listen to whatever he says. I mean,
Dvorak
is
like a Chatty Cathy doll. You know, you pull the string and he repeats certain phrases. It's the thing about Ballmer is that I think although financially Microsoft did very well under Ballmer in terms of industry leadership, for the most part, it did not. Microsoft cruised along on its enterprise legacy.
Made some bad decisions.
Missed some really big ones. The idea that Ballmer mocked the iPhone and said, oh, it'll never go anywhere. And then, of course, it completely transformed his business. He did not see it, mainly because he was a homer. He was so, he had such blinders on for Microsoft that he couldn't see what was going on around him. And really, smart technology leadership looks at the changing technology and seeks to use a Microsoft phrase, embrace and extend, which was the Bill Gates approach to it. And Ballmer did not do that.
Is it true that Ballmer referred to the iPhone as the flaming Mo?
Mm.
If he was that much of a homer?
He needed to go a long time ago, and largely in terms of industry leadership, he really failed Microsoft.
My theory is that Bill Gates kind of saw the challenges coming, and so he pulled the ripcord and like, here, Steve, take the wheel.
So no one else is going to be as colorful. I don't think anyone's going to throw chairs or was it the reins at Microsoft
The stuff that was going on when Bill Gates left are kind of the things that have happened since but done well. So, for example, tablets. You know, before Bill Gates left, he handed, you know, Microsoft the tablet PC originally. It didn't work out very well, and Microsoft kind of dropped away from it, and then, you know, Apple picked up that ball.
Dope.
now we're looking at, you know, possibly at wearable computing. Microsoft was the first with these spot watches, again, under Bill Gates, but it was too early for that. The technology just...
Well, even with their smartphones. I mean, the Windows smartphone was the smartphone to have early on. And now you look and, you know, they were fighting the Linux war, but now Linux is winning the handset round. Right. You know, there's no need for it to win on the desktop.
Right.
Well, and they don't even seem to be able to leverage things where they succeed. The Kinect has been a surprise.
They bought the company. Success for them,
and they haven't really, but they haven't really, you know, they were smart enough to buy them, and it was a success, but they haven't really done anything past the initial rollout with it.
Well, you'll have to see how they utilize it in the Xbox One. They've got a pretty, you know, a pretty powerful platform, a lot of momentum there, and while they could screw that up.
Didn't they already screw that up? Like, didn't they backpedal on all the game usage
on
that?
They made some, it was very restrictive.
Really, but then they opened it back up, which kind of ruined some of the coolness or some of the innovation in the device.
We don't know that yet. So we'll have to see how it actually plays out.
I never thought I'd be rooting for Microsoft, but I don't want Microsoft to go away. I'd like them to, you know, stay in the game and be a relevant force. You know, I want them in there.
Well, I thought for the longest time, I thought Windows 8 was poised to really be something cool and innovative for Microsoft, and then it fell. It's still teetering on possibly being successful, but with Steve Jobs, you know, passing away, and Apple kind of teetering a little bit. I mean, you know, whatever that, not like really teetering, but there's an identity.
There's a question mark.
There's an identity crisis here. Apple is in the process of having to redefine themselves. With Ballmer leaving Microsoft, Microsoft could re-envision themselves and jump in, because I think Apple's going to start to not tank so much, but with all the competition from Android and these other devices, a lot of the shine is coming off the Apple, and they're vulnerable right now to some good competition if somebody would step up and really make it happen. And that may be Android, that may be
Samsung.
But certainly Microsoft is in a position to do that. All right, so we have a reasonable connection to Pete now.
I think so.
And we have a call.
And we have, we're half hour into the show, so.
But. Should still do info.
I was going to say we're going to do the info shot, but, you know, day late, dollar short, whatever. But we're still going to do it, because we have that connection to Pete, and we're going to utilize it, because you worked so hard on making that happen.
So,
Matthew,
on the line.
Apologize. You'll have to hold on, and the person.
And whoever's calling in now, yeah.
We'll get to those calls. We already covered most of the news, so Pete will only be a couple of minutes. Right? All right, so let's take it away. Info shot.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hewitt. Injected directly into your skull.
And I think we lost Pete.
Oh.
We're not too sure where we injected him. Although, does that sound like him calling back?
I hear a water drop. Yeah, hang on.
We are not having the best. I mean,
it just tells me I'm offline.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
It's a cool sound, though. Keep it going.
Is it because you're losing your internet connection, or you don't know?
Not really sure.
Well, all right. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to go to the phones. Take the call, and we made our best, a good faith effort in trying to make this Peter Hughes info shot thing happen, but moving on.
Groove, do you have the phones in there? You want me to do it?
I got it.
All right, so Groove House, who's up?
First on the show, we're going to speak with Matthew.
Hey, Matthew, you're on the air with Technology Bytes. How can we help you?
Hey, guys, is there any way to increase buffering?
Increase buffering?
Yes.
In what regard?
Well, I watch all of the HBO. My son gave me a password to get to his DirecTV account, and I could watch all of anything I want to. But it gets almost to the end, and I have to start all over again. The buffering just go out. It just stopped buffering. It stopped streaming.
So you're watching streaming video via HBO or via DirecTV?
Yes.
All right, and you're streaming that to your computer, right?
Yes.
All right. When you're streaming video, it is very bandwidth intense. It requires a good, solid connection between your computer and the internet. So your computer is connected to a router, wireless or wired?
Wireless.
Wireless, okay. if the wireless connection is kind of spotty or having any troubles, it's going to cause problems with video playback. How fast is your internet connection?
It's pretty fast.
Define pretty fast.
It's pretty fast, but the thing is, this is my neighbor's internet connection. She gave me her password, the password to her her connection.
All right, so you're connecting via Wi-Fi to your neighbor's access point.
To be able to connect to a shared cable subscription.
Yes, right.
Exactly.
Okay, so you don't have any means.
So you're pretty much a mooch.
No. It's just her turn. She stayed on mine for 5 years.
Okay. So, but what kind of internet connection does she have? Do you know? Is it DSL? Is it cable? What is it?
It's DSL.
All right. And how far away is your neighbor? Is it like on the other side of the wall in your apartment?
On the other side of the wall, man. And I get all 5 bars.
You know? All 5 bars connected.
Yeah.
Have you gone to a speed test site just to see what kind of speeds you're getting?
It tells me what kind of speeds it's getting, but I don't think I understand that thoroughly. It tells you how many,
megabits per second. If you
get MBS.
Yeah. Do you have any idea? Do you remember what kind of MBS you're getting?
54.
How much?
I think it's 54. Is that?
On DSL, that would be unusual.
That's maybe 5.4. 5.4.
Or he may be thinking it's a 54 Mbps router. It's an 802.
Oh. What we're asking you for is if you go on your computer and go to speedtest.net and run a test.
Okay.
On DSL, you're probably getting between 3 and 10, if 10 on the very high end, but more like 3 to 5 megabits.
Okay.
Which should be suitable for streaming video, but also, it also depends on how much other stuff is running on your computer
and running on her network. She may be using it at the same time.
That's the thing. She's online, and so is her son.
If her son is online and streaming and playing games, that could be affecting the speeds that you're seeing to download or stream. These videos.
Yeah, you have so many factors there that are going to be robbing you of bandwidth that that's probably
so. To answer your question, you can't increase your buffering. What happens is that your computer buffers the video to give you a kind of a seamless playback. It downloads it kind of advanced downloads the video. So when I have those kind of problems, like watching YouTube and so forth, what I'll do is I will pause the video and let that bar increase to the right until about 50% or more, and then I can hit play, and then I'll usually get the whole video without a problem.
Well, that's what I do, but I was hoping there was some kind of way to not do that, because it usually happens just when it's getting good.
Well, you get what you pay for, they say.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Let me ask you one more question now.
Sure.
About upgrade. I remember when the only way you get an upgrade is if you bought the product. Say for instance, I use almost all of the security things that you recommend on your website.
Yeah.
And they always want to upgrade now. When I'm wondering, if it's free, why
are
they giving you upgrades free?
All right, so there's two ways that you get upgrades. One, with security products, one upgrade is not really an upgrade, it's an update where you get new, because the viruses and spyware are changing all the time, they have to update the detection module so that it can identify the new spywares and new viruses that are coming out. So they offer you the update so you can update the software to keep it current.
Uh-huh.
But also these free programs offer an upgrade to their paid version. And they want you to buy the paid version because that's how they make their money.
Right.
So you can decline that as long as you're still within the agreements to run the free version. But it sounds to me like you're getting a lot of free stuff plus free advice from us, so we're going to have to move on to the next call. You know, you get what you pay for. You got to, you know.
Although it is her turn.
It is her turn. But that's what about the free HBO or free, yeah. So, yeah, keep your antivirus stuff up to date. You don't have to update to the paid version, but they may nag you. A lot of softwares nag you about, well, hey, you know, you've been using this for free. Don't you like it? If you pay for it, we'll give you some more features. We'll give you more ability to protect yourself. But it costs you. So, and then one other thing is that softwares like Symantec Antivirus and McAfee, they offer a free trial, but then they want you to pay after a certain period of time. So you have to be aware of that. So pay attention to what the upgrade is asking you to do. If it's asking you to go from trial version to paid version because your trial has expired, then you're required to pay for it. But if you're just asking you to upgrade because they want to nag you about it, then you don't have to.
I think it's getting dicey, too, to share cable subscription different credentials. Dwight, have you heard about this? I know in New York they're saying that you can actually get sued or you can get fined if you share those.
I've not heard anything like that. In fact, in interviews with executives from HBO, they kind of acknowledge the problem, but they say they're not going to do anything about it. And I think that, you know, to a certain extent, it's like they understand what that in the music industry, piracy ultimately is a form of sampling for a lot of people. They try it and then they end up buying it. So,
but the music industry doesn't see that as a good thing. They
some people, some more enlightened people within the music industry do. And I think that they realize that by putting out, well, for example, on if you look at iTunes, a lot of the pilots that are offered on iTunes of current television programming, like Breaking Bad, and you watched the other one, Low Winter Sun.
Yeah.
The pilots are all free. And so they want you to kind of look at it and see what you want. At the moment, it's a hassle enough that a lot of people aren't dropping away in order to, you know, to cut the cord. So it's not that big of an issue, but I think eventually they're going to have to end up offering this stuff where they sell it separately in a la carte, and that will, I think, take care of a lot of people who are doing the, you know, borrowing the HBO login. I think HBO is, and they've kind of acknowledged they're looking at it, they're talking about it, you know, and when that happens, when stuff like that happens, it will kind of, there will still be piracy, but it'll kind of peter out.
I just want to take a minute and thank Netflix for the profiles.
The profiles.
Those are cool.
And keeping, I mean, they have got a lot of really good content. And just for the low amount that they charge for streaming, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if there's going to be, like, is there a limit to how many profiles you can create? Do we know?
I think there is. And I don't remember what it is, but there is. I think there is a limit.
But I set that up when it came across. I noticed that, you know, they.
How many do you need?
I'm just curious how many. I only need two. I'm glad to have two. I only need two. I don't share mine with anybody else other than Cynthia, but I'm glad to stop getting recommendations for Marple Mysteries and other Agatha Christie stuff. there's Pete. All right. So, yeah, I like the profiles, but I wonder if that might be leading towards them being able to limit the number of users or something like that.
They already do limit. You can't have more than, I think, three streams at once.
Really?
On Netflix, yeah.
Moochers beware. All right, so we got Pete back on the show.
We have him, and then the internet connection kind of drops, and so he's back and forth.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know what to do about
I don't know.
That.
He could start the news, but...
Then we don't, and then we do again.
Yeah. Say a news story, Pete. Go for it before it disconnects.
All right, well, let me go with the phone number, 713-526-5738. We're going to make another attempt to do the info shot. But if you want to be on the air, we will be taking calls throughout the show, so you want to get queued up for that, 713-526-KPFT. So,
go Info
Shot. We now join the Info Shot already in progress. Go Info Shot. We're not going to replay the theme song again. We've already done that once. Did we lose them already?
Yep.
All I have to do is say Info Shot.
All you got to do is say, huh? Was he there?
It
He's
pops in and pops out.
All right. Sorry about that, Pete. Maybe you could call it on a landline. it sounds like we're just having too many problems with the Skype. I hear him laugh once in a while.
Yeah.
But then
he's there now.
Here he is. There he goes.
Arr.
Yeah. Why don't we? What?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we can
hear
you.
But you're going to connect. You're going to disconnect in just another minute.
So why don't we? All right. So is he gone?
I'm still here.
All right. Go ahead.
So go ahead and try it. I'm going to do the like super quick version then, just so.
Just don't say the word.
The big stories. One thing to watch out for, and you may need to go search, is that there are architectural weaknesses in both iOS and Android that make it possible for hackers to steal sensitive user data and login credentials for popular email and storage services. Apparently, both OSs fail to ensure that browser cookies, document files, and other sensitive content from one internet domain are off limits to scripts controlled by a second address. So in other words, if you go to a site that doesn't have good purposes, they can access stuff from other sites that you visited, especially, say, Gmail and sites that they can know what the cookies are supposed to be, and they can lift the data and get your stuff. So that's not good. In another story, this one, the iPhone, you know, it's the 10th is the event. And T-Mobile has implemented vacation blackout dates between September 20th and 22nd, potentially confirming a prospective September 20th release date for the iPhone 5S and 5C, which, you know, that's the idea, is that there's going to be the two different handsets that they'll release at that point and, you know, replace the 4S. And the other rumor is that there won't be any iPads released at the September 10th event. Apparently, new iPads will come later in the year after the iPhone 5S and 5C event, according to Apple experts and observers. It's rumors. After rumors surfaced Wednesday, claiming the new iPads would be announced alongside.
And the Vanishing Peter.
Yep, Vanishing Peter.
New iPhones. Apple blogs responded no. 9to5 Mac said it contradicts everything we've heard thus far about Apple's fall iOS device launch. I'm gone now?
No, you're back now. You're back. Yeah.
Am I back?
You are.
Okay. See, the connection, the weird part is the connection didn't come and go. But so anyways, no iPads at September 10th, and we'll see what happens later. I guess that means there'll be more rumors later. And the last couple things, this guy in cool Raspberry Pi type news, this guy built a miniature Mac Plus that's 3 inches by 3.5 inches, that looks exactly like a Mac Plus but scaled down. He carved it out of a PVC foam board called Sintra and put in a 3.5 inch TFT LCD monitor, and then he put in a Raspberry Pi board running Raspbian with the mini vMac emulator on version 6.0.8 of the Mac OS. That's pretty rockin'. And finally, on Kickstarter, there is a project for an Arduino board with a half a mile range, wireless range. So geek.com notices the new Kickstarter project, which is looking to raise $80,000 by the end of September. It already has more than $26,300 pledged. The product's called Flutter. It'll come in two versions, a basic one with an integrated antenna and a pro version with battery charging, an external antenna, and more memory for code. The system uses an unlicensed 915 megahertz radio band. Just seems like, so now the possibility would be they could build a Blinken box that could be controlled by an Arduino, and the Blinken box could.
And there he goes again. We were going to get
be a half a mile away from the Geek Gathering and still be controlled from the Geek Gathering. And that's the news.
All right, we got through it basically. Yeah,
sort of.
Had a few dropouts, but other than that,
is it the internet connection?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we have your pledges of support to Technology Bytes and to KPFT will go towards scrubbing the wires so we get better internet.
Sadly, the technicals now are a lot better than they've been the past few weeks. The jitter and the other things that kind of measure whether the connection is good. So when the connection is on,
it's good.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, you're pretty clear when I can hear you. It's just the weird dropouts. All right. Well, you know, we do the best we can, but it's a sincere and earnest effort here every Wednesday night for Technology Bites. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us. We are welcoming your phone calls. We've got about 15 minutes before we have to do the top of the hour break. Looks like we do have a call in the queue, so Groovehouse, queue it up, and who is it?
Who is it? Up next, we're going to speak with Christopher.
Christopher, you're on the air with Technology Bites. Hello, Christopher. Oh, did you hit the right line? You hit the wrong line.
No, I got you. Hello.
There you are. We hear you now.
All right, all right. How's it going tonight?
Good. What's up?
Oh, not much. Hey, so I've got a MacBook that I bought in 2008, and something I was thinking about the other day was what's going on with viruses and Mac and spyware and all that crap and vulnerabilities. How's Mac doing with that?
Well, Mac is doing fine, but there are other people that are not Mac that are still targeting it. So there's increases in the number of exploits and things that are coming for the Mac. It's still pretty uncommon to hear of a Mac getting a virus, but they are out there.
In most cases, the exploits aimed at the Mac they try to trick you into doing something, often installing a codec to watch a particular kind of movie. There aren't a lot of drive-by type of exploits they try to trick you into doing things. So long as you kind of don't do anything stupid, you're pretty. You should be pretty safe.
Okay, right on. And another thing too is Bluetooth and the iPhone has. Is there an ability now to be able to connect your iPhone through Bluetooth and transfer files as if it was like a little, you know, computer to computer kind of thing, or what's going on with that? I find Bluetooth to be a real pain in the butt. Believe me.
There, because you can't access the iOS file system, there's no like simple file transfer back and forth. There are apps that use cloud services that let you do something similar to it. The cloud acts as a waypoint, but there really is no way to transfer files directly over Bluetooth back and forth.
Okay, yeah, because it's really murky when you go online and you look at what people have to say about it, and they're talking all kinds of nonsense, but... So it was really difficult to find information on why or why not. But okay, well, if it's you know, the incompatibility, I guess, with iOS and Snow Leopard.
Well, it's just not the way that the iPhone was designed to be used. The iPhone wasn't designed to give the user direct access to the file system. All file transfers have occurred through iTunes, and like Dwight mentioned, the cloud stuff's pretty cool because you can get an app for the cloud service that you're using. I have a number of different cloud-based servers that I access files from, so I can upload the file to the cloud service that I'm using, and then by using the app on the iPhone, I can get access to those files and do what I need to do with them. There's not much in that regard that I'd want to do on an iPhone in terms of those kind of files, maybe a handful of documents, but really the way that the iPhone's designed or what it's intended for, all that stuff works the way it's supposed to through iTunes with music and videos and internet access and email and so forth. What are you wanting to get access to?
Oh, well, you know, I was just thinking if I, you know, take a picture with my phone, then I could just send it by Bluetooth to my computer instead of having to plug in,
well, if you do
open
it through
iTunes and, you know.
You don't even have to do all that if you do it to the iCloud, if you do it the built-in cloud service on the iPhone, then you can have that available. Do you use a Windows or a Mac PC?
Oh, I use a Mac.
Okay. Yeah, just use iPhoto.
Just use
iPhoto
iCloud.
Pick it up.
Yeah, if you just enable iCloud, it'll make those images available on all your Apple devices. All of the images that I take on my iPhone, because I use iCloud to sync them up. I have them on my MacBook. I have them on my iMac. I have them on my iPhone. I have them on my iPad.
The one thing is that you do, in order to see them on the Mac, you have to see them in iPhoto. You have to enable Photo Stream in iPhoto. Okay.
Okay, gotcha. Interesting. So I presume you guys have seen the movie Jobs already.
I have not.
No.
I have not.
It looks so bad on the trailer.
I have not
bring myself
encouraged by the reviews.
You know, I went to see it. My cousin gave me the a ticket to go see it on the opening screening night last Wednesday at the Edwards Cinema. And, you know, it was interesting. I learned a lot that I didn't know, but it felt like the coherence of the movie, not that the movie wasn't filmed properly, but it felt like there was stuff that was left on the editing floor. It almost felt like an editing problem. So, you know, Ashton Kutcher wasn't bad. You know, it was okay. But in light of watching the movie and learning a little bit about Steve Jobs, if Ashton Kutcher's portrayal is any reasonably semblance of fact or truth, I'm curious about what do you guys think is going to happen with Apple now. I heard you guys talking a little earlier. Where can they go from here if you don't have somebody like Steve Jobs, who was such an adherent, such a true believer in content and quality over quantity and bottom line? You know, do they have anybody there now that's even remotely like that to carry the torch?
Well, there's nobody even remotely like Steve Jobs, period, in the world.
Well,
there's just nobody like that. So if you followed Apple, and apparently you're an Apple enthusiast, and that's great. If you followed Apple, you know that Steve Jobs, you know, was a visionary. The things that he brought to the table and the way that he wanted the company ran did great things for them. And is there somebody who's going to step up and be the next Steve Jobs inside of the Apple Corporation? It remains to be seen. We're all kind of watching. Everybody's kind of looking. If you watch, the only way that you really get to know that is when you see the next new thing come. And we haven't seen the next new thing come yet. What we're seeing is advances on the iPhone. Maybe we'll see some advances on the iPad.
It's a holding pattern almost.
Kind of, yeah. And so what I think is happening, and the other guys can chime in on this, is that we were talking about this earlier, is that Apple's in a state of flux right now. They're vulnerable.
Right.
Companies like Samsung and even companies like Microsoft have an opportunity here to step up their game and fill that void. Right now, a little shine has come off the Apple. So people have turned their gaze away from Apple. Some people have, the true acolytes, the Steve Jobs acolytes, have kind of turned their gaze away, and they're susceptible to having their gaze drawn to something else now.
Microsoft and Samsung and these other companies, they're only going to be able to take advantage of that if they actually have somebody who has that type of Steve Jobsian sort of vision of, like, what can we do next?
I don't think it necessarily has to be a persona. I don't think it has to be a persona. I think you have to focus on the technology. You have to come up with a vision. You know, certainly a person's vision is going to be helpful, but what people are starting to see now is that it's not necessarily about the cult of personality. It's about, what does the technology do? How affordable is it? Does it serve my needs?
The closest
Let Dwight chime in for a second. The closest
company you have right now doing the kinds of things that Apple did when Jobs was at his prime is Google. The problem with Google is it's such a heavy engineering-driven company that the user-friendliness and the simplicity that Jobs enforced on Apple's engineers is not quite up to snuff. Google's getting a lot better at that. And
right.
I think the product Chromecast is a good example of that. But they're still kind of like, a lot of the stuff they do is very cool, but it's so geeky that the average person isn't necessarily going to adopt it. At Apple, I think they're in kind of a retrenchment mode. Steve Jobs would have pushed and pushed and pushed to get things out the door, and I think we would have seen products faster. But I think there's a different design process going on. Having Johnny Ive do both software and hardware is going to be really interesting.
He can blend the two of those worlds to be able to be innovative.
Except he'll be stretched thinner because he's got to do twice the work, where before Jobs kind of sheltered him from that.
I see. So now it's the mantle's being thrust onto his shoulders rather than being able to lean on Steve Jobs and lean on cohorts and so forth.
I see
the difference there. Okay, well, thanks, guys. I'll let you guys get to the other call, but appreciate your answers. Appreciate talking.
All right, thanks for your call tonight.
No worries. Take care.
All right, bye.
It's not going to happen, but I think it'd be really cool to see Woz at the reins of Apple for a little bit.
Woz?
Yeah.
That's kind of more like...
I know it's not going to happen. I want to be able to walk into an Apple store and pay for something with Woz bucks. That'd be awesome. He prints his own money. He's a character.
Yeah. Characters don't run companies for the most part. So.
Mickey Mouse.
Excellent point.
All right. So, wow, we got a minute or two. We'll take another call here real quick.
But all right.
Who is it?
All right, up next, we're going to speak with Albert.
Albert, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Well, hello there. I'm hoping I'm sounding okay. I'm using the Skype phone feature for the first time.
Okay, you sound fine.
Okay, thank you. I'm just wondering if anyone in there has had any experience with those manufacturer-on-demand DVDs that are put out, like, you know, from Amazon CreateSpace and Warner Archive, because I've had bad luck with the longevity of any recordable media, and I ordered my first one recently, and the second disc in the set already has problems, and it was only 2 months ago.
I have never, ever been a fan of DVD or CD media. Just don't, especially stuff that you write yourself. I mean, manufactured stuff that's a higher grade from, like when you buy a movie that's been produced or you buy somebody's album, those tend to be okay. But anytime I've ever written my own data to disc, I've not trusted the longevity of it at all. And I don't necessarily have direct experience with that, but just from talking to people who have made backups to DVD or recorded their own stuff to DVD or CD, that those things tend to be flaky.
Well, I noticed that I went to the Amazon reviews of this particular title that I bought. It was an obscure Mel Brooks series when things were rotten, you know, from the mid-70s. And other people have had the same problem. With freezing in certain parts, and this was the first MOD title that I had bought, and I said, well, if I have a problem with this, I'm not buying any more. So, unless it's pressed. So,
yeah, well, I if that's the experience that you've had, I've not bought any of those myself. But if that's the experience you had, then that might be a warning to you.
Yeah, I bet they're burned quickly. The first thing I would do is back them up when you get them home, just transfer.
Perhaps,
over,
yeah, then, that might be a solution is to rip them to a digital file of your own. But listen, we're out of time on this, and appreciate your call.
He's from IRC.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, right. Swamp Rat. We'll cool.
All right, thanks, Swamp Rat. Bye-bye. All right, so, yeah. In my digital life, I don't have media anymore. I just, and I don't want to own media anymore. I don't want to own, like, a music library necessarily. I'd rather just have it streaming and makes things a lot more, keeps it diverse.
You don't have to box up a digital CD collection.
That's
a digital
right.
iTunes collection.
All right, well, we're going to take a short break here, take care of some station business. We're going to let Groovehouse handle all that. You're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
We'll be right back after these messages.
Imagine hearing KPFT even when a thunderstorm has knocked out power to our transmitter. Imagine listening to your favorite KPFT programs when you're out of town. You can. You can listen online with your computer. Go to kpft.org, then click on one of the Listen Live links at the very top of our homepage. We have medium and high fidelity links there for both our regular analog channel and our HD2 channel. See the links at the top of kpft.org. There's more. Imagine being able to hear any KPFT program at any time that fits your schedule. Go to archive.kpft.org and listen or download any show from the last 2 weeks. For information on subscribing to your favorite show, to download it automatically to your computer, click on the podcast help link at archive.kpft.org. This is KPFT, Houston.
Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you...
Barrett time! Barrett time! Barrett time!
Yeah. That means it's time for...
Barrett time!
Yeah. Anyway. Take it away, Barrett.
All right. School is back in session this week, at least for the 4 to 24 something set. Aside from having to slow down in school zones once again, what does this mean for those of us who are otherwise educationally unaccounted for? Well, TXRX Labs has started open registration for their fall lineup. Don't worry, you've still got plenty of time to get ready. Now that we're not answerable to state-mandated programs, we'll start school whenever the frack we want. It's a lot like signing up for an 8 o'clock class in college. It's a mistake you only make once. It's just like going back to school willfully before that first fall breeze blows through the Bayou City. Even though the new space has an ample amount of air conditioning, you won't have to sweat it from your car to the classroom while attending any one of a number of classes offering skills that you'll actually use. A lot of us older people may have had wood shop or metal shop in high school. Did you guys do that?
No.
Home ec. Home ec? Okay. Well, was that an elective, though? But they offered it. That was something that existed.
It is something that existed.
So when you're baking pies, other people were like, you know, like making like not boxes.
Not only do we have wood shop, we had riots in our wood shop. So,
whoa. You went to a hard edge school. Okay.
Well, not really.
But riots in your wood shop?
Yes. The teacher couldn't control the class. And for several class sessions, it turned into basically a food fight with wood.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, there you go. Yeah, OG like Dwight or home ec like Jay. Think of this as more of a geek shop where you can learn to cut with plasma and lasers rather than coping and bandsaws or throwing wood. Soldering and airbrushing, coding, casting, and programming are all covered in addition to more project-specific classes like building quadcopters or wiring up and lighting an art car. To check out the Hackerspaces course selection, surf to classes.txrxlabs.org. And kicking off tomorrow in San Antonio, Texas, is Worldcon 2013, a.k.a. Lone Star Con 3. The 71st World Science Fiction Convention kicks off tomorrow for 5 days and 4 nights of music, exhibits, talks, and demonstrations. The con has been hosted by countries such as Japan, Australia, Canada, England, Scotland, Germany, and the Netherlands. And, of course, it's coming right to our own backyard this weekend. While pre-registration closed yesterday, you can still mosey on down to the registration desk, set your money on the barrel head in order to gain entrance for a single day or to the entire event. Saddle up and surf to www.lonestarcon3. That's the numeral 3.org for details and driving directions to San Antonio. For now, that's it for your back to sci-fi school basics, and that's that for Barrett time.
Didn't even mention the geek gallery.
Sure. Well, it's not this weekend. It's we got one more week.
Okay.
And what do you care? You're not even gonna be here.
I want
to be out drinking Guinness and having a good time.
I want it to be successful in my absence.
We will be having a geek gathering a week from this Friday.
Yes. Thank you.
That's it for Barrett time.
That's it for your 911. All right, Groove House. How are you? Welcome back to show and all that stuff.
Yeah. You're there,
Barrett time. Says Barrett continues to strive back on the path to normalcy.
I'm getting back there. This was a shorter one. Maybe there'll be actually be. There's not a lot going on because of the long weekend.
Have you received the 2.0 heads yet? or is those?
No, I need to check with Ryan. With I know Ryan. He was traveling around a lot, but I did give him an address.
Okay.
So hopefully those should come soon. I'll bother him again about them.
Are they under your stairs, maybe?
No. I had them sent to the office. This is something not to be risked. These are precious.
You don't want the wrong person to open that package.
No.
So we had our heads scanned in a 3D scanner. Although, you know, did you see there was that guy who he has like 20 or 30 DSLR cameras, and he built this rig, and he will take a 3D photo of you and print it out. Your full body printed out, whatever size, in color. Like he could print out. He has some kind of 3D
full printer. Size.
Well, he'll not full size.
Wasn't he at the Mini Maker Fair?
I don't know if he was there or not.
I saw some 3D printed versions of you in color. They were small, but he said they could do full size. I think
not
he was
me
of Jay.
No,
of
general,
someone
of
in
general,
color.
Yeah,
he does them in color. Like he does them. Like you could get like a bride and groom action
right.
figures.
Yes, he
action,
was there. He was
action
the
figure
fair.
Size. And, you know, like for your wedding cakes or your desktop version of your dog or horse. But he uses like 20 or 30 DSLRs all stitched together to take the photos and gets very high resolution photos to do it. But then I saw that this other company is marketing a 3D scanner.
MakerBot just came out. So they've got an all-in-one scanner and printers. So it's like you've got this print bed, you set whatever object you want on there. I think it's called maybe the replicator or something like that. It's got a couple of lasers, it spins around, it, you know, actually scans the object, and then you take the object off, you hit print, and it more or less copies it. So you're dealing with like a 3D copy machine, which is pretty cool.
All right, I was wrong. It's 60 DSLR cameras.
Thought of DSLR cameras. That's really cool.
So he's got all these cameras rigged up like this. I'm showing them on the internet. If you go to Digital Trends or if you do a Google search on 3D photography, 3D printing, he's got – it's kind of crazy. But I don't know if he – it doesn't appear – if I went to the guy's website, it does not appear that he's hand-painting these after the fact. How is he printing them in color?
It's got to be some kind of – color application after, because there aren't, as far as I know, there aren't any like additive printing machines that can do that kind of color mixing.
I don't know. 3D color printing.
I mean, at most you can do like, I think they're really expensive.
I mean,
ones
if he can afford
60
colors. DSLRs all stitched together, he can afford whatever the latest, greatest technology is. 3D printing in full color sandstone. Yes, look, people are doing it.
But can you control the colors? That's really cool if that's the case.
CMYK.
CMYK?
Just different, four different colors.
Yeah. Full color 3D printing service. There are companies that do it. They do 3D color printing. So there must be the printers out there to do it. I want one. It's just all happening so fast.
So in Windows 8.1, it'll have native 3D printer support, where you print from the operating system just like you would print to a piece of paper.
Really?
Yes. It's in Windows 8.1, which is coming October 18th, by the way. 8.1, October 18th. 1-8.
3D printer sold separately.
Yes. For a lot of money.
All right. 713-526-573. And actually, the 3D printers are coming down in price. Mm-hmm. The ones that don't print in full color. The dot matrix 3D
the dot
printers. That would be a cool thing, is if you next time at DEF CON or at Maker Faire, if somebody had one of those 3D printers, but had a sound chip built into it, so it's like, beep, beep.
You have to pull the tabs off the sides.
Yeah, or it gets all scrunched up. All right, so we got one call in the queue. Plenty of open lines at 713-526-5738. And, we need to talk to Ryan about printing some full-color versions of our heads. And if you go to geekradio.com, you'll see the 3D, the Cheeto heads we had from DEF CON this year. And, they're pretty cool. All right, Groove, who's up?
All right. Up next on the second half of the show, we're going to speak with Claire.
Claire, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi. I have an HP G60 notebook PC, which has me very well for 4.5 years, but it's starting to have some problems. I got it looked at to the tune of $40, and the estimate was going to be like $200 for the repairs.
What kind of repairs did they think it needed?
Well, I need a new screen. It's flickering, or it was before they looked at it. Something wrong with the connection.
Okay.
They told me I might need a battery replacement as well because it wasn't charging up to 100%, but it's doing that now.
Right.
But in any case, I mean, things get old, and eventually it's going to have to be replaced.
Considering considering the age of the laptop and the price to repair it, mm-hmm. I don't think I would fix it.
You're on your way to a new computer at $200 already.
I know. At $200, you jump up a couple $100, and you get a brand new computer that's going to be faster and more capable than that computer.
And have a warranty,
that's why I'm calling. Just to be prepared, I was wondering if you could recommend an equivalent, because I've been really happy with it.
Well, if you're happy with HP, then you can go shop. HPs are still sold in store. Are HPs still sold in stores, or are they on the online?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
I haven't looked at Windows-based stuff in a long time. But I don't know that particular laptop. You know, I know that 3- and 4-year-old laptops have... I mean, the processors on anything you buy now are going to be faster. The base amount of RAM that comes on the computer is going to be higher. The amount of disk storage is going to be greater. Mm-hmm. The resolution of the video is going to be higher, even on the lower end models. I mean, I don't know where that model HP that you have fell in the lineup of HP computers at that time. If I look at it, it's a D60 or a G60?
G. G like George.
G like George, okay. So the specs
got
on the...
Two gigahertz of processor.
It's got two gigahertz
gigabytes.
AMD chip. It came with 3 gigs of RAM, 3 gigs of RAM. NVIDIA, it's a 250 gig hard drive, so a little on the small side, and 5400 RPM hard drive, a little on the slow side.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're going to find your base laptops coming with anywhere from probably about about 500 gigs on a fairly average laptop these days. Unless you buy one with an SSD, then it's going to drop down to about 225 and cost you more money. I would be probably... You know, if you like HP, you know, the thing about brands with any of this is that, you know, you had a good experience with HP. That's going to cause you to look more to HP to satisfy you on your next computer. But it could very well be that this current lineup of HPs might be problematic.
I'm not married to HP at all. I was just wondering if you are aware of a model on the market that I could get at, you know, Best Buy or Fry's or someplace that would be equivalent to what
anything that's out there. The lowest, the cheapest laptop that you could buy is
going to be better than what
yes.
I have.
It's going to yes, be better than exactly. what you have. It's going to, like I said, it's going to have a faster processor.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to probably have more RAM. It's going to probably have 4 gigs at the very least, more likely 8 gigs. It's going to have larger than... I'm just looking at the specs on this. You couldn't buy... It will not... Okay, I will have to warn you, though, that the new one you buy will probably not have a built-in modem.
Okay.
So you'll lose you'll lose the 56K modem. No, it's not a big deal because you're not using dial-up anymore. It's got a... It'll come with a whatever you buy is going to come with a faster Ethernet. This thing has a 100 megabit Ethernet built in on the one that you have. The ones that you buy now are going to probably be gigabit Ethernet. So faster than that. It's got at least it had an 802.11n wireless, which is nice, which all the new ones will have that.
Everything's going to be better.
Is it a laptop?
Yeah, it is a laptop. Let me ask you this. This is kind of my second question. Because I bought it in 2008, it's running Windows Vista Home Premium. I have at home, I have P for another machine that I have, and I have a copy of Office, Home, and Student. I mean, this is basically my software. I'm trying to avoid the horror of Windows 8.
I don't know that Windows 8 is necessarily a horror when you compare it to something like Vista.
I can't stand it. I mean, isn't that a problem with Windows 8 that nobody likes it?
Well, I mean, are you going to base your computer decision on what people, other people being the average user saying that they hate it? Most people I've heard that say they hate it don't like change. Or you know, they're not based.
If you don't have a touch screen computer, after you get past the screen with all the tiles, you're just on a Windows desktop.
Okay.
You hit the desktop button and boom, it's just like a Windows desktop.
I'm seeing a lot of machines too, especially at Fry's. If you go there, there's a lot of like breadth in like the machines you can choose out, and probably like 40% of them still have Windows 7. There are some Windows 7 options out there if you don't want to go to 8.
If you don't want to go to 8, you can hunt around. Like, I don't even know if they're offering Windows. I'm sure they are, maybe from HP and Dell.
You can find Windows 7 machines, usually business class machines aimed at the enterprise and businesses, on their websites and order them that way. And
yeah.
You can get Windows 7. If one thing to know about Windows 8 is that there are changes coming in an update, Windows 8.1, that returns some of the features that were pulled out of Windows 8. There's kind
Windows
of a
7.
Faux... Right, they were pulled out of Windows 7 for Windows 8. There's a faux start menu. They've also done very nice things where it's not so jarring moving back and forth between the tiles and the desktop. You can set it up so it has the same background, so it just moves away.
It's
you
really
see
not
it.
That bad.
When
I've
is
got
that
Windows
coming?
8, and I'm, you know, once once you start working on the desktop, you're there. You're
Windows 8.1 will be a free update coming October 18th.
Okay. I've tried manipulating it a little bit, and I'm not happy with it. If my new machine does come with Windows 8, can I take it off and then use the software that I have to reinstall?
No, not really.
Well, the software that you have, the operating system, if it's the OEM that came with the computer that you bought, you can't really install it on another computer. If you have a full version of Windows Vista or 7 that you own, that's not like tied to the computer that you bought previously, you could install it on the new computer. Where you might run into problems is trying to get drivers working properly for the various hardware devices on the computer. So you'll have to check with once you install the operating system, the operating system may not contain the drivers natively that will drive your Ethernet or your video card or your Wi-Fi. So you'd have to then go to the website and install those drivers manually.
Don't be so resistant to Windows 8.
Don't be afraid.
Don't be afraid. I mean, I got a new machine.
Well, she has one. She says she has one. She has a computer with Windows 8 on it, right?
No, I have clients who have 8, and we're having a really difficult time finding stuff.
What do you mean stuff?
Like the windows, the tiles that you mentioned are flying around, and then they disappear, and then you can't find where you were before.
It's true. I mean, I think, you know, I've struggled with it. I've sat down in front of a Windows 8 computer, and you get a little lost. You go, where is everything? But you can get, it doesn't take very long to get past it once you understand the fundamentals. And maybe Dwight needs to write a new book switching to the Windows.
Again, I keep coming back to Windows 8.1. Windows 8.1 makes it much, much better.
Have you
put it on?
I haven't done 8.1 yet.
You should try it. Yeah. One of the things that
I'm doing okay with 8.
If you have the if you have a resistance to it, one of the things that Windows 8.1 will do is on the screen where you have the tiles, where you see on the tiles, there's an arrow button down below it. You click it, and what you get is a list, essentially, like the old program groups, of all of your programs. And so if you don't want to work with the tiles, you can work with that instead. And it's much more Windows 7, Windows XP-like. So there are little tweaks in it that make it a lot better for people who are
Windows 8 thing.
That's Windows 8.1.
Right. Soon. So with Windows 8, for example, what you can do is you can click on the desktop tile, and that'll throw you down to a desktop. Now, how do you get to your applications?
I have made shortcuts on my desktop for the applications that I use the most.
How did you get to the program to create the shortcut?
You've got to find that screen that's got all your
so you got to go back to the tiles.
Yeah, and... like do a right click, I think, and tell it create shortcut.
Right.
Or I would just go to the C drive and find the executable and just tell it make a shortcut on the desktop.
But if you want to skip the Windows 8 experience, and I understand that you might want to do that, you can go and look at, you know, you can go online at Dell, you can go online at HP and shop their computers. And like Dwight said, in the business class section usually is where you're going to find them. They'll have them that come pre-installed with Windows 7, which is very much like Windows Vista, so you'll be familiar with it. It won't be.
Yeah, I'm coming to 7. So, or if I go to Best Buy or Fry's, you're saying they might have some machines with 7.
Fry's might.
They do. I've looked. Yeah, both of them do. But I don't know about. I didn't look at Best Buy.
I know Best Buy will.
Yeah, they seem a little bit more current, but Fry's definitely does. And then someone in IRC is saying that Micro Center also has Windows 7 machines.
Yes. So I wouldn't be hung up on trying to find something to match your 3 or 4 year old computer. I would say just go and look at what the capabilities are of the current lineups. Mm-hmm. And see what you think.
One thing you may want to look at, too, is a lot of the ones that are coming with Windows 7 happen to be refurbs. And I used to be kind of, you know, against those, but I've had pretty decent luck lately with those. So you get a little bit more machine. You know, they've been gently used. The factory usually cleans them up. But, you know, don't be cut off to those. At least check those out.
Okay.
Kind of, you know, compare the specs and the prices and, you know, weigh your options.
Okay, sounds great.
All right. Well, appreciate
it. Okay, thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. Have a good night.
You too.
Thanks. Okay. All right. All righty. 713-526-5738. Now, you know, as technology continues to evolve, eventually you're going to have to, if you're staying with the Windows platform or the Microsoft platform, Windows 8 is going to be an inescapable option for you until Windows 9.
Yeah, unless you leapfrog.
Right. So getting into it and playing with it a little bit. My belief is that if you can get to the web, you can figure out a computer.
There you go.
So all you got to do is like, how do I blah, 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 Windows 8? And the web page will say, oh, to access your program features, click here and click there. And off you go. So as long as you can get to Internet Explorer, you're on the Internet, you'll be fine, because you can. Mm-hmm. People don't realize you can ask the internet for help with computer problems. If people figure that out, yes,
computer,
help me. Okay, what do you want? So yeah, try using the web, and I mean, it is amazing how many people. I mean, first of all, Microsoft has done a great job with their website of putting up all kinds of tutorials and information on how to use their new operating system and how to use their applications. It's remarkable how detailed and easy to use their online help is, which is quite a change from just about everything I remember. But there used to be all KB articles and stuff like that, but now they've got applications built in that you can run that will fix problems.
Yeah, that fix-it stuff is really cool. That's like if something breaks down on your machine, instead of having to go edit registry keys and click this and click that and follow this instruction and do that, it actually goes in, you give it permission to do whatever it needs to do, and then it does it. And you usually get a working system afterwards, which is pretty cool.
And then they have sites where they ask you you want to do this with that, and it's with the other thing, and then you click on it, it shows you more information. It's brilliant. Because a lot of times for me, when I'm experiencing technology, I'm experiencing new technology at my job from somebody who has gone ahead and implemented it against IT advice. You know, they've gone out and bought some new computer with the new operating system, and we're not ready to deploy it corporate wide, but here they are with the problem. And I remember the first time I sat down in front of a Windows 8 computer, I was struggling a little bit. I was like, okay, well, where's this? You know, it just was not logicing itself out. But I brought up a web browser. I said, okay, I can get to a web browser. I figured that part out. So and then I just typed in, how do I blah, blah, you know, how to blah, 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 Windows 8. And boom. I mean, and besides Microsoft, there are tons of other websites that are very reputable that have discussion forums and have online tutorials that take you through the basics. And once you kind of master the basics of Windows 8, it's not so bad. It really actually kind of nice. I need to go ahead and probably get the Windows 8 1. Is the release that's out now, the developer release or whatever, is it still kind of problematic? Or
it was never problematic. It's pretty stable. And one of the things they've been doing is instead of releasing a new developer update, they've been constantly updating it on the fly. So, you know, every time there's a Patch Tuesday, there are updates for Windows 8.1, and it's just kind of, you see little things being tweaked, and it gets better and better, and they're doing a lot of compatibility updates. I haven't had a problem. I've got it on several machines and on a couple of virtual machines, and it runs great.
Okay. And you said that there's an issue with Parallels, though?
If you try to upgrade an existing version of Windows 8 with Windows 8.1, in the last version of Parallels I tried, I could not get it to do it.
It just failed, or did it blow
it fails, and then it rolls back to Windows 8.
Okay. So. All right. 713-526-5738. Groovehouse, do we have somebody in the queue?
Yes.
Who is it, and what do they want?
All right, up next, we're going to speak with John.
John, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay. Well, I'm looking for some backup storage for digital photographs.
Okay.
And right now I store them on two hard drives, but I'd like to have them somewhere else. That's both hard drives on my desk or in the same room. Can you recommend any storage?
What do you mean? I'm not following. You've got your files. You got your files backed up to two separate hard drives on your desk.
Right.
Do you want to have them off-site?
Yes, exactly, off-site, and I don't want to have to carry them off-site.
So you want to use, like, an online...
Cloud something.
Exactly.
An online service. Well, I know, you know, any of the big ones, Carbonite offers that. How much are we talking about? How much actual overall storage are you looking for?
Well, probably about 50 gigs a year.
50 gigs a year?
I think so, yeah.
You want, what about Flickr with their terabyte of storage?
I don't know about Flickr and their terabyte of storage.
It's free.
Yeah, Flickr is an online image hosting service which people use to, primarily it's used to share photos, but you don't have to share them with anybody. You can make them all private where you have to log in and see them. But you can upload all of your photos to there. And they offer a terabyte. I mean, a freaking terabyte of storage. So you could upload every image. I could upload every image that I've made in the last several years to the site and have them all there as a reliable backup. Now, the problem, one of the problems I think with the Flickr service might be that all your images are uploaded, and if you try to pull them back down, I mean, they have weird file names, so you don't have that same kind of organizational capability if you were storing them on a cloud service. But you're talking about 50 gigabytes a year, so 50 gigabytes is a lot for cloud storage right now. I mean, there are a few sites that are offering anywhere from 5 to 10 gigs for free, but most of the ones charge after that, except, you know, and there's been a few things show up, like AT&T offered the one where they gave you a free 50 gig upgrade. But I'm trying to think of what would be a good online storage service for that high amount.
I mean, you're looking at like Amazon S3, which is Amazon Simple Storage Solution. That's one of the cheaper storages. And I'm looking, and even that's pretty expensive at 50 gigs.
Just for 50 gigs, how much?
Let me do the math. I think they're like 0.09 cents per meg. So you're looking at, is that, if it's either $9 or $90 a month. Hang on.
They're charging you per month?
Check your decimal.
It's per month per, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm not too sure how they're, let me calculating that. Let me run back to their page. But yeah, they're charging you per, it might be per gig, but it's something per gig per month.
Right. So you start, go ahead.
I was expecting to have to pay for it, and I had looked at Amazon S3, and it seemed like a workable thing. I just
it's a reliable service. They're doing good work with what they're doing. I think they're one of the reputable ones. Again, companies like them or Carbonite. Which I don't know if they'll let you do. I guess they'll let you do that kind of storage.
Probably I'll let you do a backup, but they're probably going to be a little bit more expensive. I mean, the biggest thing I think you've got to choose from between like S3 and a Flickr is that Flickr will make those photos public to the web, to where if you want to send someone a link to one of your Flickr photos, that's really easy to do. With Amazon S3, you can't really do that. You can make some things public, but it's really kind of tough to do that. So it's much more like upload it once and then forget it. There are storage costs, and there are also costs for uploading and downloading, but the bulk of the costs are just going to be from letting it sit out there.
Right. Okay.
But they can give you all the way. I mean, they've got pricing for if you want to go up to like 5,000 terabytes per month, things get pretty cheap by the gigabyte. So.
Right. Okay. Well.
Hey, last thing. If you do that, check out S3 Fox. And check out, there are a lot of browser plugins for Firefox and for Chrome that let you connect to Amazon S3 really easily without having to have any dedicated software.
Firefox connects to Amazon S3, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, there's some plugins out there. Like if you just go and search for whatever your web browser preference of choice is, if you go and say like, hey, Firefox Amazon S3 plugin, there I use the Firefox S3 plugin that just works really well. So it's like you can go in, you'll put in your credentials, you click a button, and the next thing you know, instead of browsing a web page, you're browsing your S3 storage.
Great. Well, okay. Thank you very much.
Goodbye. All right, well, thanks for your call.
Right.
713-526-5738. We've got, we've got plenty of open lines. All of them, in fact.
And a half hour to go.
Why is my Windows 8 telling me I have to update my password?
It does that.
I don't
know. Wow, really?
Yes,
and
it does.
Do you have to? Does it make you do it?
You can turn it off, okay. but I think by default it reminds you. It wants you to change your password every 60 days or so.
That's the That's
very
the
corporate.
Same. That's weird. That's the same password I use for my Xbox account, though. If I changed it on the...
I'm sure it's an option in there to make it where your password never expires.
Right. Haven't had that pop up yet.
My math was super off. He's looking at $4.75 or so a month for storing 50 gigs. That's not terrible,
It's doable if you're making money.
Yeah.
Shooting pictures.
I don't know how much Dropbox gives you storage, but I think like in 5 gigabit increments or 5 gigabyte increments, rather. Probably for around that same price.
I'm still gambling on dual hard drives at the house.
Yeah, he's got more than he needs, I would think.
Well, I understand what he wants it out of the house so that if the house burns down or somebody steals all his stuff, it doesn't get destroyed that way. So having off-site storage is good. I've thought about that myself in terms of, I've got 3 terabytes right now of digital images that I don't want anything to happen to. So,
One thing you can do, if you don't work at home, is having a couple external drives and bring one into the office and stick it in your desk and then have one at home and you back stuff up to it and then you swap them every couple weeks or whatever time period you think would work. I've had some success using, you can get those USB or FireWire, they treat an internal hard drive kind of like a cassette. It's got a slot on the top and you just slot the drive in and load it up and then eject it and take it off site for a backup.
Right. Well,
that's fairly cheap and if you go to work somewhere and you have a desk where you could lock it in a drawer, that gets it away from your house and it costs you just the cost of an external hard drive and something to hook it up to.
Also, another thing is if you're worried about something like floods or fires, they make external hard drives that are extremely resistant to fires and floods, or like fireproof and floodproof.
Are safety deposit boxes, are those reasonable? Are those a few bucks a month, or are those like really expensive?
We've got one, and my wife handles the payments on that thing, so I don't know how.
Yeah, you could drop hard drives into there. I would expect they'd be weatherproof, waterproof, what have you.
Oh yeah.
If you really want to be paranoid, put it under lock and key. If you're Snowden.
I don't know that. Maybe. I don't know that safety deposit boxes are waterproof. I wonder if they've closed the vault. Is that waterproof?
I would assume it's in the bank in the vault. You would think it would be. Because people store valuable documents. I would think it would have to be waterproof.
I guess that's true. I guess that once the vault door is sealed shut, in the event that a flood or fire is coming, that they would seal that up. You don't hear about banks burning to the ground very often. Not that we're advocating that. We don't want to see it happen. Now that I think about it. you could store them off-site. I mean, I've thought about doing that, doing some kind of rotation for that, but it kind of gets unwieldy. I like the idea of doing it online, but is that cost comes down, having all your files up in the cloud might make sense.
You know, one thing you have to keep in mind also is if you, depending on who you are associated with for your internet access, there may or may not be data caps. If you're doing online storage.
If you're doing online storage, data caps could be a problem because you'll exceed your bandwidth.
Especially that first time you upload the 3 terabytes.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, Comcast doesn't have them at the moment.
Are they down?
No, they do not. Not in Houston. AT&T still does.
They will. I just logged into my account a little while ago. I know that they said there was an outage, so I was just checking things out. They still give you a graph based on 250, though. So they still want you to know how much you're using, and they have that artificial 250.
It's based on 280, if you look
at it. Was it 280?
Yes. 250 was the number. But that's what the graph shows is 280, which is interesting. In some cities, Comcast is trialing tiers. And so you pay for a certain tier and you get on your speed, and then you get a soft cap at that tier. They've raised the amount on most of the tiers to 300 gig instead of 250. And then you pay, you know, $10 for every next 10 gig that you use.
And if you're on the top tier, they spell it T-E-A-R.
That's right.
Because you cry when you get the bill.
But in Houston, they're not doing that. I think mainly because there is enough competition here they're just not going to go there.
All right. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. We have time left in the show, and we'd be... Windows 8 makes some funky noises. I'm in this one screen that I can't seem to get out of. Where's my... Oh, there it is. Okay. Thank you.
Don't forget, you can use on the trackpad, you can use all the gestures that you can on the touch screen, so you can bring the charms out and so forth.
I wasn't sure if I could do that when I wasn't in full screen mode, but yeah. All right. So Groovehouse has a call queued up for us. We still have open lines, and we have plenty of time left in the show, so 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us.
Mm-hmm.
Groovehouse, who do we have?
So up next, we're going to speak with Sarah.
Sarah, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yes, hi guys.
Hi.
I do have a very quick question for you all. There's a website called Viber, V-I-B-E-R. Apparently you can make a phone call and text messages using this, downloading this for free.
It's with other Viber users.
Correct.
So so everybody that you talk to has to be using the software.
Okay. Well, my question is really, is it truly free? I mean, there's nothing free.
Well, it looks like it's a service that maybe operates over the internet.
Okay.
So, like, if you get Skype, for example, you can make Skype to Skype calls over the internet for free. It's only when you hit a landline that you have to pay. So if I was to use Skype to call your cell phone, I would have to pay for that call. But if I use Skype to call your Skype on your computer for my computer, that would be free.
Do you have a Gmail account by any chance?
Sure.
Google Voice is free, and I make...
Can you make landline calls?
Oh, yeah, for free. Yeah, as long as it's not long distance.
Right.
I've made them. I've yet to be charged for any kind of Google call. But, yeah, you can go in. Now, it's weird. If you actually go to voice.google.com, I haven't found a way to make a call from my laptop. But if you go to gmail.com, there's a little phone icon once you sign up for Google Voice, and you can call whoever you want to straight from there and text them.
And is this also free?
It's free.
Now,
you see advertisements and stuff when you're logged into Gmail, but that's about the only thing.
So you can actually send, you can call from the Google Voice
I do it all the time. I'll even call my own phone when I misplace my phone so I can see where it is. Because I don't have a landline to do that anymore.
So is that also international?
Well, no, no, international, that's when they'll charge you a little bit. Now, what you can do on that is you can actually prepay into the Google Play Store, and then when you make international calls, it'll come out of that balance. Like, I have a dollar in there, but I've had a dollar in there.
See, Viber is not going to be free for you to make international calls. Viber is going to be more like Skype, where they have to be using the service on a computer that's connected to the internet for you to contact them, based on what I'm seeing. You're right. There's no such thing as free for you to sign up for a service that's going to let you make international long distance phone calls for nothing.
Exactly, and I was wondering, but you know, I did receive a call that it is, and also you know, text messages and pictures and video, and they told me that it is free, and I can do that as well, but I didn't dare yet.
If they're using Viber and you're using Viber and they don't ask you for a credit card number, then you can do whatever they let you do for free.
Yeah, exactly. But you have to just go www.viber.com, and then you can do it for iOS, Mac, for Windows.
Yeah.
But I wasn't really very much, you know, trusting this thing, and I was like, okay, we're downloading this summer. And then these things come like, do you want these people to make changes on your hard drive? And I was like, do I want to? But well, then, I mean, that's a question. What kind of changes are they going to make in my hard drive?
Well, the software has to install to your hard drive, so it's going to ask you if it's okay to install it. It's really a matter of whether or not you trust the software or not. And I can't recommend or say anything against Viber. I don't know anything about the company. I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. The website looks legit. It looks okay. I mean, I'm not seeing anything that's screaming at me that says scam, but you might want to do some Google searches on Viber reviews and see what people are saying. Tell you if it's infecting your computer with spyware or not. But who are you trying to contact and where?
Those are family members. Those are people who I know.
Do they use Viber?
Yes.
Are they having any troubles?
Well, I don't really know. It is very, very, very new, like maybe a day or two, and I don't really know how long they've been using it or how long even Viber is people using it.
All right. PC Mag has a review of Viber. They say, let's see what they're saying about it. They're saying free messages and calls for Android, smartphones. Looks like that, you know, they're not, it looks legit. Looks like a legitimate business. So I would imagine that from, you know, Viber to Viber, it's free. And as long as you're not being asked for a credit card to top off, like, you know, a pay as you go type of situation, they don't have any way to bill you. So, like, if I sign up for Skype,
mm-hmm.
I can sign up for a Skype account, load the Skype software. They don't ask me for any credit cards or anything unless I want to
mm-hmm.
buy credits to be able to make calls to people's landlines. But as long as I'm making a call to another Skype user and I have their ID, doesn't cost me anything. It's completely legitimate. Think of it like email. Email is free because it's computer to computer.
Right.
So
yeah.
It's the same kind of deal. But do a little research if you're uncomfortable with Viber. You know, I'm seeing reviews on CNET.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing reviews around. It says
it's been on iOS also, 12 million users.
Yeah.
So.
It looks
12 million users in iOS using Viber.
That's what they claim.
Wow. Okay, well, that's 12 million people. That's a big number. But my concern was really mostly, you know, changes in my hard drive or taking information, things like that.
Well, read the terms and conditions when you install it. They'll explain what the licensing is and what they're doing, but you know, anytime you install software on a computer, it's going to ask you, is it okay that we do this? You know, the user access controls interact with you because it's actually having to write files to your hard drive. It needs to have access to your internet connection and so forth. So, you know, I understand your concern. I haven't installed it myself, but from what I'm reading, it looks like it's okay.
All righty. Well, thank you very much. I learned a lot of things within years listening to your show, and I am a member.
All right. Well, we appreciate your call. We appreciate you listening.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Viber. I don't understand, you know, Skype to me seems like the thing. I mean, I don't want to push one company over another, but Skype.
Viber looks like a clone of.
Like a clone of Skype,
yeah.
So, it looks like it might be a little bit more razzmatazz or something. They want to be a little bit. Viber, it's cool.
CNET says it's giving Skype a run for their money.
Is it? Okay, yeah. So it's a competitor for Skype, and. But Skype works great for me.
Just use Skype.
Yeah, I know.
You already know that's
pretty it's legit. Free, and we know it's legit. So if you've got these family members or overseas that want to, stay in touch with, they make Skype apps for the iOS and for Android, so you can totally do that.
Although our show, at least especially yeah. the past few weeks, including tonight, has not exactly been a commercial for a great seamless Skype usage.
Well, anytime you're communicating over the internet with old hardware, you're going to have problems.
Yeah.
So they can't blame Skype for that.
I think it's more the connection here than anything else.
I blame Pete. it's his fault. Whatever it is,
I think the past couple weeks that the problem was on my end, and I think I've got it resolved because, like I said, I've looked at the tech specs on it and, right. and staying better other than these occasional like disappearance things that have been happening.
Today this is a different thing and I appreciate that the technical difficulties evolve and change to keep it fresh. I haven't heard a dog bark once, which I jinxed myself. Maybe he barked during the cutouts.
Maybe.
All right, so we got some calls in the queue and yes. now we're winding down in the final 15 minutes of the show, so let's go to the phones and see who's up. Who's up, Groovehouse?
All right, up next, we're going to speak with Matt.
Matt, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I have a question. I have a bunch of old slides I'm going to scan, 35-millimeter slides, and then I also have tons of digital pictures because I have a new grandchild. I'm wondering, what's the best way to database all these things so I can have, for instance, this is a picture of Mary, this is a picture of John, this is a picture of John and Mary.
Well,
search for those kinds of things.
What you want to be able to do is you want to be able to meta tag your images.
Right.
So when you are starting to scan them in or upload them, you need a piece of software that's going to let you do meta tags on them. I know, for example, are you using a Mac or a PC?
PC.
I know, yeah. For example, in the Mac and iPhoto, you can start to tag faces, and it'll look through your entire library and see if it recognizes any other faces.
Pretty good at it, too.
Yeah, so like
really?
You have a
picture. I mean, I have an iPad, so I can use that as a tool, I guess.
I don't know if iPhoto in the iPad will let you
do
that.
No, it's on the Mac.
It's in the Mac on the iPhoto.
Oh, okay.
But that's just one example. I know that other softwares... like Lightroom will let you do, will it let you meta tag? Yeah, Lightroom will let you meta tag so you can start to, put tags in that says photo of Bob or, Bill and Jane or
right.
things like that. But yeah, archiving can get really tedious and cumbersome really fast.
Yeah, I'm sure. So I wouldn't have very many categories. It'd just be like some people, like, 10 family members. What I
just start tagging
something
them.
Like that.
As you scan photos, just start adding the data, the tags, and just go from there. It'll be a regular thing for you once you start saving
right.
your files over and over.
Another, is what you can do is when you scan these images in, you put them into a folder. Then you obviously naming the folder something identifiable is helpful.
Sure.
But then you can open up these folders in a program like Lightroom. Where you can crop and adjust your saturations and exposures and stuff and make the pictures look as nice as you want. And then right. you can, at that point, you have all your photos in a gallery and you can start clicking on them and tagging them and you can add tags to multiple photos and so forth. So Lightroom is one that will do that. It's not that expensive of a program. It's a few $100. Great software if you're a photographer. It's great.
Really?
Great. I mean, Groovehouse and I are both photographers, and we both use Lightroom.
Another free program that allows you to meta tag and semi-edit photos is IrfanView, IRFAN, and you can meta tag and batch process photos. You can erase meta tags if if I take a picture and I don't want anybody to know my settings, I can just delete.
Now we're talking about that's EXIF data.
EXIF data and tag data also.
Okay,
but there's free options out there, but Lightroom works.
And you can download a free trial of Lightroom if you want to play with it just to see what it looks like. You can go to Adobe.
That'd be a good thing, because I'm just getting started with all this, so I want to get a feel for what is going to be a reasonable amount of work for me to do and a reasonable software for me to use.
Well, it's just finding something that allows for good and easy to follow workflow. I mean, it's the difficult part is developing your workflow, but once you have your workflow, then you're able to replicate that time and again. And when I started using Lightroom, I just like the workflow of being able to bring my photos in, go through the ones I want, delete the ones I don't want. With Lightroom, you can even go in, like you have a whole batch of photos. You can rate them. You can say, okay, I give that one a 1-star rating. I give that one a 5-star rating. And then I can filter based on the rating that I've given that photo.
Yeah.
So I say, okay, this one's 1-star. I'm going to delete it. 2 stars, I need to go back and revisit that after I see if I have any 3 or 4 or 5 stars, you know, that I do. As I'm going through the photos, I'll start to tag them, because usually when I do a photo shoot, the first batch of photos usually look like crap, and then I get better throughout the shoot as I settle in. But, you know, you can filter on that. Select them as rejected or accepted, and you can then filter on all your rejected photos and mass delete them and things like that. So it's a very nice tool.
That's interesting. That's pretty cool. Yeah,
it's a little bit of a learning curve, but once you start using the program, it just...
But I've used a number of other photo editing softwares like that, and I find Lightroom has the best workflow and the best functionality and features. And like I said, there's tons of tutorials on it online. You can go and research it. But like I said, you can get a free version or a trial version, use it for free, and at least see what it does for you. What are you going to use to scan your slides?
Well, you know, I messed around trying to find some different devices, and it's like either something really expensive or something that looks crappy. And I bought, I think I paid $100 for a little scanner that is, I have in my hand, a little Wolverine scanner.
Does it have any kind of feeder?
Yeah, it has a small feeder, and it will feed strip film, you know, negatives, which I have some of, and it'll feed slides. What I really want to accomplish is I have a lot of really nice looking Kodachrome 35mm slides that are so beautiful.
Yeah,
I have a lot of those. I mean, I don't have a staggering amount, but I have years worth of casual photography with those, and I'd like to just get those digitized so I don't, you know, so they're there, and if my kids want to mess with them in future years, they could just, I mean, I want to make files that I can hand to the family and they can have them, but, you know, I have boxes of photographs from my parents' generation where I'm not going to know who everybody is at all anymore.
Right.
You know, those obscure faces. And so I want to take care of that. Get that done where they can just say, oh yeah, that's, okay, I get who that is. So that's really kind of one of the things I want to do, and I just don't want all those beautiful 35mm slides to go to waste.
Well, I hear you on that, and the good thing is that those 35mm slides, if they're taken care of, are a great archive as well.
Sure, exactly. Yeah, I mean, they're in great shape. I have 35mm slides that my father took. He worked for the CCC when he was like just barely older than a teenager, of like projects in Big Ben and stuff like that, and pictures of them driving around a Big Ben in a Model T taking pictures of cactus, and those 35mm slides look beautiful.
Awesome.
Yeah, because I wish I had negatives and slides of stuff my grandfather shot, and you know, when he was a captain in World War I on a destroyer, and he's got these great photos he's taken all over the world, but they're prints, and they're going to...
Well, thanks. That's great information. I have a related question.
All right, real quick.
So what is the utility of having a 41-megapixel phone camera?
I think it's kind of like, you know, one of those things they just wanted to do it. certainly you have the potential is there to have a high enough resolution photo to where you can use crop as your zoom.
That's exactly the
if you crop the image, you still have a high enough resolution image close up, because you're going to almost have the same effect of using a zoom lens. and you have enough resolution to where when you crop it, you can you still print it out.
More megapixels, more problems.
I got a chance to use that camera, the Lumia 1020, that camera phone, and I took it out to Lake Conroe, and I was shooting out. There were two piers out on either side of me, and I shot with an iPhone and with this camera, and I could zoom in close enough that I could read the text on the back of people's T-shirts out on the pier. And so, yeah, it definitely has its benefits.
Yeah,
so, more lens needed.
Right. Well, more data is better. It's just storage is getting cheap. But listen, we got to move on to the next call.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
All right, appreciate your call tonight.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye. Yeah. All right. So we got one call left in the queue. We're about to run out of time, but we might be able to get another call. It's hard to say. 713-526-5738 if you want to play the lottery with us. Groovehouse is shaking his head.
We need to take this one.
He's got no faith. All right. Groovehouse,
this is it.
This may be the last call of the evening. Groovehouse is declared.
This is it. Final call. We're going to speak with...
Last call.
Patrick.
You don't have to listen to this radio station, but you can't listen to us. All right. What can we do for you, Patrick?
Hey, guys. Real quick, you guys were talking about the VoIP services earlier about Skype and Viber and stuff like that. And it seems like one thing I've noticed with them is the call quality is not the best. And is that dependent on the software, or is that something having to do with, say, the connection between the two people regarding, like, maybe one person's calling from a different bandwidth or something like that? Because, I've got family that lives in Mexico that, I always end up getting the call either dropped or, it just fades in and out. And I also noticed that it also, at my house, say streaming something over what I use is AT&T's U-verse, and I have a fairly fast connection. I think I got 16 megabit download, and I was just wondering, is there a different broadband service I can subscribe to that has a more stable signal? Is cable better?
So who do you have your internet access through?
U-verse.
U-verse is a fine internet service. They provide very nice, fast bandwidth. There's so many potential bottlenecks when you're talking about your internet connection. If you're using Wi-Fi, for example, the Wi-Fi could be spotty, and your connection between your computer and the wireless access point could be having issues. Your connection to your actual internet service provider modem, your modem may be having issues.
And if they're in Mexico, there are all kinds of things.
Made a great point. If you're calling somebody in Mexico, chances are their internet connection is not going to be high quality.
Is this Skype to Skype or Skype to landline?
Skype to Skype, and it's been pretty. The quality's been consistently spotty. When, of course, I'm talking about a couple of obscure places because they live in a small town outside of Guadalajara.
Yeah, that's it. It's their location.
Yeah, and then of course Argentina.
If you want to test that theory, try a Skype to Skype call with somebody here in the United States who has a nice fat pipe.
Yeah, I think I have tried that before. Still, it just seems like there's always parts of the conversation that are missed. And I was curious if I could.
Are you using an older computer or a newer computer?
I'm using a Windows 7, a little HP laptop.
How long have you had it?
A year or two.
Well, if you have software issues on your computer that could be affecting your Skype calls, it could be a problem with the software. There's so many things that it could be. I would go online, do some research on troubleshooting Skype connections.
One of the things to watch for is sometimes routers there are settings. Skype uses UDP for some stuff, and you can Google that if you need to know more about it. But some routers, as a security thing, there are settings that make that UDP connection stuff a lot more complicated for Skype. And if you turn, you have to get into the router and to turn it off. One of the things I had to do.
We're running out of time, and I'm sorry to have to cut you off, but the show's coming to an end, so we got to let you go. If you want to contact us offline, I'd be happy to talk to you. How much time we have left, Groovehouse? Our clock went
about
to straight
20-something seconds.
All right. Well, you've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week on Technology Bites.
You can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Imagine hearing KPFT even when a thunderstorm has knocked out power to our transmitter. Imagine listening to your favorite KPFT programs when you're out of town. You can. You can listen online with your computer. Go to kpft.org, then click on one of the Listen Live links at the very top of our homepage. We have medium and high fidelity links there for both our regular analog channel and our HD2 channel. See the links at the top of kpft.org. There's more. Imagine being able to hear any KPFT program at any time that fits your schedule. Go to archive.kpft.org and listen or download any show from the last 2 weeks. For information on subscribing to your favorite show, to download it automatically.